Hello, racing fans. Edison Hatter here with the Harness Players podcast. And hopefully you've tuned into this to hear an hour of my lovely voice as well as my co-host voice. That's Ray Catolo, because it's just us for an hour, Ray. And we've got a lot of things to discuss.
And hopefully you're of sound mind and spirit, because we're going to be talking about a lot of things, a lot of complicated things about horse racing. It's going to be a lot to process, but you know, it's a... When you do like ayahuasca, right, which is like this like common spiritual thing, you always have like a shaman or someone who guides you along that ride. I like to think, well, you're not that, but I like to think that I might be for whoever is going to be on this spiritual journey with us.
Well, I don't even know what to offer in terms of a suggested schedule, but let's see. Things we're going to discuss. We're going to talk some Fraser Downs racing for this Friday. That's going to be April 26th. Mm-hmm. We're going to discuss some Yonkers Raceway action. That's next Monday, April 29th. We're going to discuss Woodbine Mohawk. They've got a massive payout in the Super High Five coming up on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And we are going to discuss some other miscellaneous things. The Swedish horse racing, the major races starting to come up here. We've got coverage again this year. We've got Grand Circuit season underway. We'll maybe talk through the schedule just a little bit. We got some stable promotion to offer you. So we got a lot to get into, Ray. So I don't know. Where do we want to start?
Wait, you're offering me stable promotion specifically?
It's open to you. It's open to anybody.
If it's open to anybody, then I guess let's save that for later. If it was just going to be for me, I would want to get that handled right off the bat.
Okay, so we'll save that for later in the show. You get to hang around and wait to hear if you want to hear about stable stuff. But I won't wait too long, because nobody probably can listen to that much Ray Catolo. They'll probably tune out at some point, Ray. So, you know, we gotta give them what they want early.
I guess.
Well, let's jump in with some Fraser Downs racing action. Fraser Downs, it is this Friday, April 26, 2024, 7 p.m. first post time local time. And Ray, they are somewhere across the continent. So what does that mean for us here in Pennsylvania and New York?
If they start at 7 p.m., that means you're looking at first post at 10 p.m., which is most likely when your sons and daughters will have gone to sleep. And you'll have to hope your wife has gone to sleep, because if she found out what you were doing late at night, that might be an awkward conversation. But if you listen to us and you at least win some money, that might make it a less awkward conversation. Like, yes, honey, I was up late spending money on horses, but I got more money. Sometimes that works.
So we only have one listener in the state of Kansas. So just to give them a special shout out, what does it mean for them time-wise?
Kansas, so that's going to put them in central. I've been to Kansas. There's no way it falls in mountain time. I think you can even see the next closest mountains from Kansas, which would be like 1,000 miles west and maybe even east. They'd be looking at a 9 p.m. first post. So maybe their wife can play along with them, you know, if they stay up late.
Well, the action gets started at 10 p.m. here for us on the East Coast, but obviously this action we're going to be discussing will be a little bit later in the night. It's a 10-race program, and we're going to discuss the late pick four, which starts in race number 7. So race 7, late pick four action, Ray, and, I don't know. What do you got for us here? $12,000 claimers? How do we start off the evening?
I think if you're looking for something real simple, you can find it in that Fraser late pick four. I'm not going to divulge how simple it gets, but I'll just say I think it starts with a single on, unfortunately, the most obvious horse in the race, the morning line favorite, Light My Shadow, just because this horse is coming in off of 3 straight wins, and he is winning these races with such specific authority. Two starts ago, or last out, I should say, he made that brush to the lead in a 28-2 second quarter. So he made a 6-length move in that, and then he carried that speed to a 27-1 sprint up the backside. So I think he reasonably tired in the lane that 29 and change final quarter. And the next most logical horse inside of this race, One Tough Beach Boy, tends to sit so far off the speed that if Light My Shadow gets any kind of jump, which he usually does by virtue of the brush move he makes mid-race, I feel like there's really no way for this 5-horse to get involved. So logically, it seems like the 4, he's somewhat faster than some of these others. You know, my little ginger man might be able to work some kind of trip, but then that break and stride last out's a little questionable into how he might go about this race. He is dropping in class, though, so if it's not the four, it's maybe the three. But I mean, the four has just been going so well and getting better with each start that it's tough to see how he loses this race.
Ray, what if I told you I'm not even using the favorite on my ticket?
Then I think you are misreading the morning line.
light my shadow. I mean, you pretty much outlined it there. You know, One Tough Beach Boy is obviously the most logical contender on paper besides Light My Shadow, given what he did last time out against him. But again, I just think tactically it's a race that Light My Shadow should take care of business. So we'll take Light My Shadow as the single. He's a shadow play gelding, Ray. I hear he's produced some okay ones.
Quirky guy himself, but he's thrown out a fast one here and there. Wait, was Bulldog a shadow play? I don't even remember at this point. Oh, he was? See, I would have thought with the name Bulldog, you would have been out of like the mighty Rottweiler, who we all remember from the many stakes races he won in years past. He might have even beaten Sun Beach somewhere, and no one talks about the mighty Rottweiler, if you've ever noticed that. I do want to point one thing, though, and it's that Light My Shadow's most recent loss was to a horse inside of this race, Sunset Rider. And that was a race where Light My Shadow could not clear the lead. So I think the big question tactically inside of this race is going to be how much they're going to give to Light My Shadow. Or the other way, too, would be how much more powerful is that horse than these other ones? Because if he's not able to clear in whatever move he makes, then this is going to be an interesting race. But just given his last three starts, seems like he's going to have an easy time muscling through it. That's the tough read inside of here.
Well, let's move on to race 8, the Penny Bath Memorial, 3-year-old filly and mares. That's not even possible, right?
For a 3-year-old mare to exist. Yeah. I don't want to, you know, like, oppose progress. Maybe they're working on stuff inside of like the horse labs and things like that. You know things evolve. You once were a fish, if you can believe that. So I don't want to say anything's out of the question.
Well, 3-year-old filly and mare is fine. $50,000 on the pace. Well, we got two horses here that are going to take a lot of money, so I'm assuming we logically have to be singling one, not using both here. So I suppose we might see another single out of you.
You're spot on there. Things are starting to look real simple so far inside of this sequence. The edge, I think, you have to give to the horse that has been racing, and that's the 5 Kootenay Coco, just because with 4 starts under her belt, and on top of that, they're sequentially improving starts where she's showing more and more speed, that sort of conditioning is going to be more beneficial than something you just get out of qualifiers like the one Over Ice has. But at the same time, looking at those qualifiers, you can see Over Ice is getting into race fitness, and they, you know, what other race can they put her in? She was 5 for 5 last season, so does she fit anywhere else in the condition sheet where she could have got any kind of prep race? It's tough to really tell. So I think they just took their chances inside of the qualifiers, and they are prepping her specifically for this race. So at the very least, she should in theory be ready to go. But with also then how this race sets up, looks like the 5 has much more speed to offer early, and so she might be able to grab the edge. And then in trying to evaluate how the race would unfold, we'd have to evaluate how likely Over Ice could convert like a pocket trip or something like that to a victory, or will the 5 have enough authoritative speed that they just keep carrying it no matter the challenge? I side with the latter of those arguments, but that also means that it's probably the chalk because she's the morning line favorite by a point. That said, doesn't make sense to use both of them because you're just adding on your investment cost and then cutting into whatever your potential winnings are. Anyone who's ever run a business knows what this means, because if you can cut what you're spending to make more money, you always do that. So it's the 5. It's the 5.
I think it's the 1.
Okay. Fine. I mean, yeah, Jim Marino wins a lot at Fraser. He's one of the top guys there, was one of the top drivers there before he had to go into training from an injury. It could happen. She's adding Lasix. the very least, getting the second choice might add a couple cents to your payoff versus the first choice.
Yeah, I mean, I just think she was so dominant last year there. You know, and what we saw of those five starts from her, obviously does have that layoff. But to be fair, has had several qualifiers, four qualifiers now here this spring. So, you know, not maybe a little bit more experience than, you know, a horse with like one qualifier per se coming into this one. Draws the rail, which I think is an okay spot to try to get the trip behind Kune Coco, who's definitely going to take off, right, and to see if this one can't get it done. So I like the one horse over ice. That's a single I'll take it. I think there's a little bit more discrepancy in the betting by the time this thing settles out. I think Kune Coco is the heavier favorite based on this year.
I think it's also worth noting, looking at the trainers, Jim Marino, 19% from 361 starters versus Kyle Chadwick, who from 24 starters is winning at 79%. Which honestly probably just means this is like his main horse in the stable. He probably has a small stable, and this filly is 10 for 11. So he's got 13 other starts somewhere. Most of those wins.
Well, either way, it looks like there's a decisions to be made in the eighth race for handicappers as to which way you want to go. But race number nine, we move on. $9,000 condition claimers on the pace, and Speak Dollars and Cents is the morning line favorite. Ray, we've gone chalk from you. What do we do here?
I don't like favorites like this. They're some of the toughest for me to figure out because the six horse clearly has been in against tougher competition. You can even look in those lines. He was in against one tough Beach Boy who was in that other race with another nice one, and he's now sequestered inside of this condition claimer, which is a much weaker bunch by almost half the purse that's on offer for just the straight non-winners of four level. And this guy very clearly has been just kind of second, third fiddle in every start he's gone. He's a frequent chaser. He doesn't really pass horses. And so because of that, I don't want to use him, but he's a fast enough horse inside of a race that really lacks a lot of speed elsewhere. That he might win it, and I don't like that. But at the same time, I was trying to see like if there were universes where a horse like McGarrett could win, and I think it's possible because he's escaping Billy Buxton, who has been on a roll in his last few starts. But I mean, this guy's another one where he's been in positions where like he's supposed to win and he slightly doesn't get there, or just given how the race sets up, he has to go a tougher trip. And you know, the more air some of these horses have to take against a class dropper like the six, that eats into whatever chance they have to grab the race, because I do think there is a form discrepancy between the favorite and then everyone else inside of this race. And it just sucks, because then what that means is that it's a third straight single on a third straight favorite. I don't really know if the two Is He Watching can really make a big enough step forward to grab a win inside of this race. Interestingly enough, she was the favorite against Billy Buxton last out, and while giving chase, just flat leveled off to be beaten eight lengths. Her only win this year was in 201-1. So it's like, what do you have to offer? We don't really know. I don't want to be three straight favorites, but I will say if there is a favorite that's going to lose in this sequence, it's probably this one, because like the class drop isn't enough, but sometimes you know, those horses just go and walk.
Two, Is He Watching? Three, Moneybags. Four, McGarrett for me. I think there's universes where any of those three can win, Ray. Look, we got to beat a favorite. You, I know, love your talk. I'm going to teach you someday that the key to making money in this game is beating favorites. So you can have your favorite. Two, three, four for me.
Fine. I mean, I think I'm like a child eating their crushed peas versus, you know, someone who's dining on a fine piece of cheesecake right now. And it's of my own doing, because I'm not being imaginative enough inside of this sequence.
I will say, for Izzy watching, yeah, I mean, the times are a little bit of a concern. Moneybags comes off that sixth scratch. McGarrett, though, I think is the top choice in here. You know, he's been knocking on door against these types. And like you mentioned, gets away from Billy Buxton. So does 0-10 on the year. That's maybe the question mark there. So there's question marks with all these. But speaking of dollars and cents, is 0-11 on the year, too. So I got to say the same thing. I understand the drop in class. But 2-3-4, I'm going to go with, because speaking of dollars and cents, it's going to be too short of a price for my liking. Race 10, same conditions, $9,000 claimers back on the pace, and well, what do we do here to close it out, Ray?
Well, I mean, there you see, here's Billy Buxton, and one lesson to take off of looking at a horse like Billy Buxton is that in some of these previous races where at least me might be being too logical, as grammatically correct as that sounds, Billy Buxton, if you look between his most recent races, went from going on a line that isn't super eye-catching or impressive. It looks like it melds into form with many horses on the grounds here, to putting in a powerhouse performance. Like, for some of these horses, the difference between a big effort is one start, and that one start could be in whatever race they're in whenever. So that said, in some of these other races, if you get a bit more creative and read between the lines a bit more, there might be room versus all of the favorites. But I'm just looking at how the race shapes and not presuming any big steps forward, I don't know how they beat Billy Buxton. Billy Buxton, the fact that he was able to take such a big step forward from one start to the next, to me is eye-catching enough. Inside of a field where most horses are racing fairly consistently, they're throwing the same effort start to start, so it doesn't seem like there's much hiding under the hoods of some of these others. But with Billy Buxton, he went from just kind of cutting a mile to then going in a race where he was able to make an authoritative brush to the lead and then widen that lead, albeit though against horses like McGarrett, Is He Watching, who in the other race are just kind of eh. So there might be also a bit of a class discrepancy there. Nonetheless, I feel like Billy Buxton's the one to beat. I don't really know how to extrapolate off these other lines of the others, how they get involved in the race, especially if the race goes into something like a 56, 57 mile. Most of these horses would be straggling at that point. And so if Billy Buxton doesn't, the edge is to Billy Buxton.
Billy Buxton single, turn the page. So it's for me, it's going to be 4 with 1 with 2-3-4 with 6. So I spend $3, Ray. I've got $3 coins sitting here on my desk right now. You're going to hear them in a second. You know, I'm just going to take those 3 and go bet my ticket.
You see, somehow with my ticket being all singles, it costs $20 because I that's the only way you're really going to make money if you bet a ticket that is favorite. First time in my life it ever seems like that's probably the most optimal play inside of a sequence. But I mean, if you hit it for $20, I imagine you wouldn't get close to the parlay, I don't think, but I think maybe there's a chance. I don't know. I will, and I think more people should admit that sometimes.
Well,
they don't know.
That's our thoughts on the Fraser Downs card. Good night of racing, including that $50,000 memorial race coming up on Friday evening, April 26th, out there at Fraser Downs. And you can get free program pages on the website. Tune in, 10 o'clock race card. A great evening of racing out there. So tune in Friday night. But we'll turn our attention now to next Monday night. That is Yonkers Raceway. And the Borgata Series is over. There's still a $10,000 guarantee on Pick 5 pools. So we will roll on with a little bit of Borgata talk. We'll briefly discuss the last 5 races on the card. That's the late Pick 5 on Monday. But first things first, Ray, give us the impressions on Hellabaloo. 2 years in a row, he's the winner of the Borgata Pacing Series.
Yeah, and I mean, he had to do a little bit of work, but he still worked that pocket trip inside of the race. And the difference here was, instead of being able to slip through a seam at the inside, he had to swing 3 wide before getting locked in by the whole backfield that was storming home. The one thing that frustrated me, because I felt like it could set up for something weird like that happening, and I saw Brennan in the backstretch. He had horse with What Stanley Got, and that was the horse that I thought would be live at a price inside of that race, and he kept staying inside, and I thought he could have finished better than fourth inside of that race had he tried to get rolling on the outside, but that's whatever. I thought Coach's Corner would be the strongest closer inside of that race, but that was all just slick driving from Yannick, which is nothing we're surprised to see. He's one of the best in the game, and so he read the race well. He made the move at the right time, and he gets rewarded with a nice $10,000 check.
Now, what are your thoughts? We live in a universe where, of course,
nothing matters.
Where what?
Everything will be enveloped by the sun. Is this where you're getting at, Mr. Scientist?
No, I want to say, what's the word I'm looking for? Well, screw it if you do, screw it if you don't, essentially. I mean, when it comes to, when you let Desperate Man go in that spot, you've got everybody whining at you. Oh, well, that was a waste of time. You let him go. We cleared. He took care of business. And then you park him like that, and then everybody's, oh, gosh, they got to play nicer. You got to go. So what are your honest thoughts on going to the half of 53-1 and the decisions by, I guess, both Matt and Scott, to be fair?
On one hand, and I wrote this in one of our group texts, I am surprised that Scott was that aggressive, because if you've watched Scott Zeron through most stakes races, he's not an aggressive type like Yannick is, where if Yannick's in the bike, you go, oh, he's probably going to launch to the lead. Scott, you can read as someone who's going to be a bit more methodical in how he drives, where he might go to the front, or he might want to try and work something a bit more tactical. And that's been his edge through most of his career. So for one, it was funny to see him being so gung-ho on the lead, but I also feel he did that only because he thought he had the best horse inside of the race. Matt probably felt the same way. And what also surprised me is that he would do that when he clearly had a horse who was good off a helmet. And so it was perplexing in that way, because they both tactically did not have to do that, but it was one of those examples of, great racing, which is that two guys think they have the best horse in the race, and then they pin them against one another, and they find out neither of us had the best horse in the race, probably because we screwed the other person. But I mean, too many people complain about stakes finals and stuff that just go kind of single file around the track. Everyone's too scared to pull. I feel like then the Borgata is an example of what racing should be, which is, you're not afraid to go. You're gonna put yourself into the action, and if it's gonna go against you, you're gonna keep going because you want the big piece of the check, and you think you have truly that great of a horse. I think if more people believed in the horse, if more drivers and trainers believed in the horses that they had racing on the day they were racing, things would be a lot more competitive versus kind of when you watch certain races and you see more methodical type of racing and very clearly, horses getting primed for certain spots and things like that, because this has become a management game versus a racing game. Borgata, though, that should be every stakes race. It should be that chaotic.
Well, Ray, I'm not sure if you're aware, but next Monday night, it's a Monday night, so I'll be on the desk with Peter Vanaglia. So Monday night, the show, that's where you got to tune in to get some of my thoughts and ideas on this pick five sequence. But you're free to offer some now, so $10,000 guarantee.
That's such a coy way to say I haven't done the work yet.
It's Thursday. That is Monday.
Look
at it.
Right. I understand, because Thursday is my Sunday, and so I can't believe you called me into work today.
So what are your thoughts on this Big Five sequence Monday? Actually, you know what? I was literally – I walked to the race office the minute after they drew for this Monday card, so I saw these entries before. I've been studying these horses longer than anybody else, right? Because I knew these the minute the program came out, I had it.
Oh yeah. Well, they tell me who's the morning line favorite in the ninth race.
Well, they don't put morning lines on the program right when they draw.
Okay. I see how in depth then you're looking at these races. I like this sequence. I think it gets tougher towards the end, because one thing with Yonkers racing is that sometimes it plays to form, and other times you're really having to look into the form because of how these horses get limited on a smaller track, which basically means you can see a horse do well at Yonkers and you can judge if it's because they just got a good draw and they were able to get into the action, or you have to read into a line and see how maybe like the post might have influenced what kind of trip they got. Because it being a small track, and you if you try to launch from post eight, that's going to really change what kind of trip you're going to get, perhaps leaving you more likely to go a parked mile or a tough trip versus a horse that might just take back from post eight and hope they get into the mix. I think there's a lot more to read into in some of these races, and so it becomes tricky in that respect. But all in all, I think there's room for some value inside of the sequence.
Do you have a ticket suggestion to offer to us, or is that all you have to say?
Oh, I didn't realize that you were setting me up like that. My ticket comes in at $6.
Well, we're really going economical today with you. $1 and $6. All right.
Yeah, it gets kind of slim towards the last legs because I'll admit I didn't have as great a gauge, but I feel like I have a good sense of the first two legs. I'm really against the morning line favorite in the first leg. I'm going 2-5 inside of that one. I like Maximus Red coming in off of three straight good races. Was able to win two starts ago from a first over trip. Just seems like, if anything, he might be one that gets tired on the lead. And so if he has something to chase, that keeps him involved. And given the inside draw, you know, that it's possible that he's going to have to work that kind of trip alongside some speed to his outside, which would then probably put him somewhere in like the middle of the pack, where then he'd have to climb into ranks to try to get involved, ultimately to his benefit and at probably an okay price. If not him, though. The 5 is coming in off a race where he was beaten by like a much the best horse that's actually racing later inside of this sequence. And I liked how he was racing otherwise inside of the claiming ranks for Scott DiDomenico's. Now he's making his second start for Dennis Laterza. Gets Gingras, so I imagine he's probably going to try and go forward. And if he does go forward, he seems like he has a decent amount of speed to carry, where he could also be live at a bit of a price. I don't like when a horse like the 3, My Ultimate Byron, makes the first start off the claim, and the race where they were claimed was such an outlier to some of the previous efforts. Sometimes I feel like that horse might be at risk of not having everything in the holster the next start, if maybe that just kind of took a big bite out of them. Because also, worth noting, this horse was not in the next week. They didn't move the horse up in class. They kept him on the sidelines. So maybe he'll come back with that same kind of gusto, or maybe, like I said, that could potentially be an outlying effort. I think that's the gamble of the race, but also it's what leaves room for some of these higher priced horses to win. The second leg, I figure you just want me to keep talking. Do you want me to keep talking? Because you're not going to offer anything.
Give us the ticket, and this is your thoughts on the sequence. I got
okay. I want to leave room. I want to leave room for you to do like an ounce of your job. So then the second leg, which is an invitational, I'm 1-2-4. It's not super efficient because one of them is the morning line favorite, Some Moment Somewhere, coming out of the Borgata Constellation, where he just got second just based on how the trip went. Venturesome Arden
sorry to cut you off. You're right. I do want to do part of my job. I just wanted to mention in that sixth race, the invitational pace, number 4, Some Moment Somewhere. He's coming out of the Borgata Constellation. He picked up second, but it really just kind of was a result of the way that trip worked out. But anyway, continue on.
I'm so glad you said that, because I feel the same way about how that race unfolded. And so now that he's moving in against a weaker bunch and he's probably going to go forward, and maybe even work a good trip, depending on what Captivate Hanover's going to do, he's one of the more logical horses inside of the race. But also, Energetic Hanover is a fringe player because he has not been in against these horses. He's been racing mostly in Delaware, and that mile he's coming in from against Captivate Hanover is excellent. On top of that, he goes from post 6 to post 1, so he gets an even better draw. I imagine he's probably going to try and go a bit more of an aggressive trip to protect position, which should put him involved. And Moonshine Kisses, the 2, I think stands a chance. The thing, though, is he's in the similar position as the favorite I talked about in the last race, where he's coming in on just such an eye-catching mile that it's tough to tell how he's going to come into this next race, because he's raced fairly evenly when at Yonkers. But you look back to his lines five starts ago when he was second specifically to Coach's Corner, and has also been racing against some of the good ones in Semi Tough, Ideal, Some Magic, and has shown sharp speed over this track. I imagine then he should be able to uphold some kind of strength. He's not going to be going 49 over this oval, but he's seeming like he should fit inside of this class. The draw works out well enough that he should be able to do something, and he's not going to be the favorite, so he could be some value there, but I think he's among the more obvious horses to use. So that's a 1-2-4. The third leg is 1-2 because I can't figure out how these other horses get into the race. King James Express is the only, like, maybe just because he can come from off the speed. This race is loaded with horses that can get planted into position and then just not move forward in the last half mile. Pound for Pound, at the very least, has shown like a little bit of closing ability, and he's coming in off a massive win, which also could be the result of just weeks of getting bottled or like being put too far back and then finally deciding just let the horse roll. He's been sharp every week. Let's get him a win kind of situation, but he's going to be the favorite inside of this race. And similarly, Twinbee Deluxe is going to take a lot of money off of that mile that he won at odds on against this class last out. And he's going to go forward since Yannick Gingras in the bike. A lot of obvious things going forward inside of that third leg that I don't think we can really beat. And then it's a single. I think Buddy Hill in the fourth leg is going to be ready to go first off the bench. His back class sets him up to do well inside of this race, and I think he can handle being on the smaller track. He won 53-1 back in February against the Nowers at 10,000 level, and so it just seems like he took some time off, coming back fresh in his 8-year-old season to make his 11th start of the year off an okay qualifier. I'm not a fan of everyone else inside of the race. I can't figure out what price they're going to be, and whether it's worth it to use them inside of the sequence, and then what likelihood they have to work a trip that will be beneficial to them. So I think potentially the three is a single in that fourth leg, and then in the fifth leg, I am singled to the one, because that's another race where it's horses that they're getting good trips, but they aren't doing much with them. So it's tough to figure out what they have to their power, and based off of what trip they might get inside of this race, what they can actually do with it. Because I know Pretty Handsome's a really good horse, but it's kind of it doesn't make me enthusiastic to use him when I see he gets a pocket trip and then he's just giving chase to finish second by four lengths. I don't know what to do about that, about a horse that's not going forward, or if he goes first over, he's always finishing on the ticket but not winning. So to me, I feel like that gives the Pylon Post the tactical edge, even though this horse is not the fastest off the gate, but he's continuously closing into the mix. So to that end, he could be a vulnerable favorite to use inside of the pick five sequence, but you might still get there. You know what I mean? I can't trust some of the other ones inside of the race. So that's a $6 ticket.
So $6. Give us those numbers so we got them in number form.
Yeah, the numbers are 2-5 with 1-2-4 with 1-2 with 3 with 1. It's honestly not the most efficient ticket you can make, but on a $6 investment, at the very least, I think it has some room to profit. Just in a theoretical sense, if it loses, it loses. But
that's amazing, Ray. That's actually the exact ticket I had, so we can just skip mine and move on to the next segment.
Oh, you shouldn't even show up to work Monday at that point.
Exact numbers I had. You can even show up on the desk, do the work. You got it all.
Oh, but then I imagine the check is still going to hit your bank account.
I like that idea. You got a great plan. That's a great plan. And maybe we can even do the same at Mohawk. Let's try again at Mohawk. Let's see if we have the same numbers in common at Mohawk. But we're by Mohawk Park. We're going to partner with them again this year. I think we're just finishing up some final paperwork to get stuff in place. Ray, you and I are the children of this operation. We have to let Mike Probosi and the adults handle paperwork. We just kind of exist.
Well, right. I mean, I don't. Could you imagine my ass doing anything like legally binding?
Well, me too. They don't trust you or I with that, and for good reason. I'm not blaming them at all.
I mean, I know my way around a henceforth. I think I could handle it.
But race number 12 on Saturday night, this is April 27th at Mohawk Park. This is just a little bit of bonus coverage before we get into the deep coverage for them for the year. It's an 11-horse field, and it's a mandatory Super High 5 payout. But I will say, this time around, they're not freezing the wager like they normally do. So I don't know. It's got to make a couple people a little bit nervous, right, Ray? That if it gets hit tonight, tomorrow, you know?
It's not. Do you mathematically understand the likelihood of it getting hit?
Do you understand what Murphy's Law states?
Well, that's not even a law. That's a feeling of emotion. You know how long it took Isaac Newton to make gravity a law? Because before that, everyone was going, oh, you feel that objects are pulled towards mass? Oh, that's cute. Keep going with that feeling of yours. No, it takes time. It takes decades upon centuries of that thing happening over and over again versus it just feeling like it happens. And on top of that, what a piece of garbage, Murphy, to make a law like that. Who would want to make a law about bad things happening? That I would not want to curse that onto any future generation of humanity. When we're on this planet, we should be trying to forge a better tomorrow. So at what point would someone want to go, my crowning achievement to the existence and continuation of this miracle species on a miracle planet is going to be that everything, it will fall apart. Okay?
Yeah, right.
What a terrible invention. That's like inventing the nuclear bomb. But at least we got a 3-hour movie out of that.
We got to switch jobs for like a day. You know, you got to remember that Edward Murphy was, of course, an aerospace engineer. You got to do my job for a day as an aerospace engineer, and you understand anything that can go wrong will go wrong.
Well, if I spent an hour inside of your position, I think I would just understand the amount of nihilism necessary to churn the amount of money you do.
Well, let's just get into this pick five, or not even pick five, a super high five.
You are picking five. It's just you have to pick them in order, but not like the winners. True. Yeah,
it is a pick five, you know, whatever. So 11-horse field, 11-horse starts from the second tier. Normally it's 12 for these. They only got 11 this time around, so that's interesting. And Ray, I know that you obviously, like I, have fallen in love with a horse in this race and cannot not pick him, and his name is American History.
This race is loaded with just every horse from my nightmare. I've been live to tickets so many times in my life, and one of these horses has somehow screwed me. So
that's funny. It's actually my exact thought when I was looking at this ticket, too, that I was like, gosh, Codename Cigar Box I've needed at points, American History, the Greek Freak, Ron, Cobra Queso, Mama Summer. Like, literally every single one of these horses at some point or another have cost me money at Mohawk.
It's also amazing, too, because I remember watching... I remember watching the Greek Freak in Pennsylvania Sire Stakes as a 3-year-old. And at this point, that means I was 4 years ago. And so I'm just also getting taken through time. American History, I remember calling the Breeders' Crown Final that he won. And at this point, that had to be like 5 years ago that he won that race. I don't remember. I'm at that point. I'm not even old enough to be at a point where I don't remember the past. That's not good. If I learned anything from this podcast, Ed, it's not that there are races that you can, you know, make money, and you can make money betting, which even then I'm kind of still trying to figure that out. I'm learning that I need deep medical attention on all fronts, mental, physical. I'm doing okay spiritual. I think that's where you could use a bit more of a pick-me-up. But this race specifically, oh my God, this credit to Mohawk. They have a way of picking the right race for these high fives, to have them where they're like mind-bending, but also in a way logical. And I only say logical because it seems inevitably the favorite wins in these like every time. But you don't know who it's gonna be. You don't know who they know is gonna win. You know what I mean? Like American History makes sense. He's been okay at like these kinds of condition ranks, and it also is interesting that they've been able to teach him how to race from off the speed. Because I'm sure you remember that he was one that they just would let roll. He was a let roll type, and he would keep going, and then eventually he couldn't do that anymore, and so I guess they taught an old dog another trick. On the class drop, Like he makes the most sense, and you know the way these classes work at Mohawk, those class drops are incredibly noteworthy. Cold Creek Queso is also making that off a layoff. Ron is making that move as well. Sometimes somewhere too, and sometimes from that 10 post, you'll see him fly. You know, that's what he was able to do from post six last out, but then he folded to finish six by three lengths, and has otherwise been one that just tries to get into the mix from mid pack. I wish I could give you the high five cold inside of this race. This has always been one of the hardest wagers to put together. I'm kind of curious your thoughts too. I'm not curious. I want you to just talk about anything. I want you to show that you have any ground of handicapping knowledge on this podcast. Because if you go back and listen to some of these episodes and how you host the show, you're never given a chance to actually contribute anything. And honestly, I think this is credit to what you know, is that everyone just understands, oh, he knows what he's talking about. And you don't say a word. And it's not my fault. Because I know I'm talking a lot, so let's pick your brain on this. When you're putting together a high five, what do you do? How do you approach it, Mr. Hatter? You see how he's straggling right now?
That's the one. Wait, is that the one where I have to wait five? There's 5 minutes, so I got to pick five. No, that's a pick five. The high five. Yeah, so I said American history I liked, and
it's five horses.
American history, and that's it.
Well, you have to find four other horses to put underneath American history, and they have to finish in second through fifth place.
Oh, that's when I use that. The all button.
Oh,
all. There you go.
Oh, okay. So that's one way to play it. I guess.
You know what? In sincerity, that is normally the way I like to play these wagers, to be honest with you, Ray, is ideally I find a horse I like to win, which in this case, I do happen to like American history on top. Then beyond that, I mean, you know, I think we've had this debate before on the show. I think there's value in trying to not have to use that all button towards the bottom, but I also think it's kind of beneficial that it kind of turns it into a super, a trifecta, depending on, you know, how much you're looking to spend. But I understand what you're saying, that, you know, if you make decisions, it helps narrow that price down. And obviously, you know, I think that does hurt your price sometimes on your super high five payouts when there's an obvious win choice and everybody kind of goes all underneath. But in this case, I don't think American history is the, you know, there's no clear cut, you know, 3 to 5 favorite to win this race. So I think I can single American history on top, use the all button on the bottom, and somewhere in between, yeah, there's a lot that I could use in there. Horses like Mama Sunburn at 10-1 on the morning line, Cold Creek Queso, Ron, Reactor Now, Uncle Shank, those are kind of logical prices, but that's probably some of the other ones I toss in. So somewhere between using those horses in like 2, 3, 4, all at the bottom, American history on top, that's some clue of how I'd look to play this ticket. But you know, I think I've said in the past, being honest, super high fives are not a wager that I really play that much. When it's a mandatory like this, I understand everybody's got to throw in their ticket, and I will too. But it's admittedly not my most comfortable wager of all time. So that's probably part of the reason why I'm content to kind of single at the top to kind of turn it into a little bit of a win bet, quote unquote, you know, and get rid of that fifth position to kind of turn it into a super. So it's just not the most comfortable bet for me, but that's roughly how I play it.
I would venture to say hitting a pick five is easier than hitting the high five in certain cases.
I'd agree. I mean, I think it depends on the sequence, but yeah.
I also want people to know that the initial ticket Hatter pitched, which was single and then four alls underneath for 20 cents, would cost you $1,000. Same time, if American history won, you could break even. That is a possibility. More likely, if you were to bet that, you would lose $400 just based on how sometimes the sequence is paid off. I approach it a similar way, except I try to get cheeky in that I'll look at some of the long shots in a race, right? So like I'll look at a horse 15-1 on the morning line, like the Greek Freak, who is making a slight drop in class. He's coming in off of a whatever race. Looks like he kind of just got locked in and then couldn't really do anything. And that was off of an interference break before that. But he's a horse that can close. And he's been one that has been good at coming from off the speed, depending on how the race sets up. And so to me, where I kind of start is I see, is there that underneath value there? Because I don't know if a race will really fall into the hands of a long shot on the win end. But if I can find some big prices to key into like the third and fourth spots, where maybe that's where I go slim, and then I open the other positions where people would think to go slim and I go wide, then I have a decent chance of hitting something very big, but I'm still not putting a lot down on those outcomes. Same time, I'm going to be less likely to cash, because the more specific your ticket is, the more you need to go your way. But at the very least, what I would be betting has a positive expected return versus doing something where I make a ticket with the favorite on top and then I'm spread. And then it could come in first fave, second fave, so on. And I'm getting the lowest possible return on a massive investment. That's just not efficient for your bankroll. So that would be how I approach it, is looking at this race. I would think to maybe key a horse like the sixth, the Greek Freak, in the underneath spots. This is frustrating too, because I know how good of a horse Codename Cigar Box is, and he is so a horse that just knows his spots. It's so tough to tell when he's in a spot where he's going to be ready to go. But he's one I might also think about throwing into, like keying into the underneath spots, because he's just such a sharp horse. He belongs in higher companies and even at the preferred ranks. But he's always either put into tough posts or things like that, that hurt his chances of getting involved, and then he doesn't get involved as a result. So that would be the only way I could approach this, is if like I look at this race and then horses like the six, the nine, you know, anyone are offering prices that are like double digits or something like that. And if I could hone in on them trying to land in some of those underneath spots and then open myself, maybe even on the win end, just like spreading on win and second and fifth, and then try and key on those third and fourth spots, that I can keep my ticket costs down, but I open myself to some of those higher payoffs that I might have not been able to construe if I was just handicapping the race.
Well, that's some good chat from us on Wood by Mohawk. We've got about 13 minutes here. We'll wrap up here. So we've got a couple things we'll kind of hit back and forth here, Ray. Some random stuff. Let's start with that stable.
We usually do at the beginning of the show.
We'll start with that stable commentary. And you know what? Maybe it is. We'll pretend this is for you and you only, Ray.
Okay. Now I'm interested.
They're going to be filming this week. In fact, as we speak, they've already probably filmed it. Mm-hmm. Ohio and Ontario two-year-olds from the stable. Actually, it's going to be today and tomorrow, so we're recording on Thursday. If you're listening to this Friday, you know, whatever. But they're all going to be posted by Sunday on YouTube, so you can check out the YouTube channel for the stable. Check out some of those. There's a set list available online. Obviously, the stable's website, stable.ca, has all sorts of information you could possibly need, and including a lot of those horses you're going to see training, there are shares available. So you, Ray, including you can buy some of these mm-hmm. horses if you want for some of these two-year-olds. And for new owners, potential owners, there's new ownership webinars. It's a 60-minute video call to explain the stable's priorities to their clients, the costs, what the purse monies are, training, racing locations, buying, selling, communication, transparency, the client experience, which includes hopefully not dealing with Ray Cotola very often. So, you know, good information on those new ownership webinars. And obviously, we're very happy here at In the Money Media to have the stable.ca is one of our partners, and Ray, you know, we got to jump in there and get in with the stable and get some ownership here.
Even though I've never owned horses, like I've been in this business a long time. Some would say longer than you've been alive, Ed. Some would say longer than I've been alive, and I question that. And one thing that has really opened my eyes in terms of handicapping races and stuff like that has been, you know, trying to think about it from the lines of a trainer and an owner, and you know how you go about mapping spots for your horses and racing your horses to try and optimize their ability to build the best, you know, bankroll in their earnings that you possibly can. And so I think in that end, even though it's you know, owning a horse is fun because winning with a horse you own is different than winning with a horse you bet. I do think there are, it also gives you a new perspective on how to look at the races, just from that end, and that is beneficial to how you handicap races and bet on races. But then also too, it makes you start to appreciate more how the sport works and how things move. Because if you're just a gambler inside of this game, I could open a betting website right now and a race could go, I could lose, and then in 1 second I could go to the next race and I could get this rapid fire action. But then if you own a horse, then you're seeing the reality of how this sport works, of how things start at day one with finding a yearling and then it being maybe 2-3 years down the road where you possibly find the winner's circle. If you're lucky, it's just 1 year after you get the yearling, or like you claim a horse and then it's weeks of time versus a second of going to the next race. It's a slow process. There are so many hands that are involved, and you start to just appreciate how this game is even able to function. Because you see a guy like Ron Burke have horses, and while he is involved with those horses, he can't do what he does if not for, you know, people like Mickey, his brother, or Keith Kamen, or like these other people who are his second, third trainers that help keep the operation running. There are so many hands that are involved at just getting a single horse onto the racetrack that it also is helpful just remembering that as a bettor, in terms of how, you know, you see a horse race bad or you see a horse race great, and just remembering how much is left to chance in a way, because we can't talk to these horses. We don't know what is actually going on with them. And it's up to just loads of people getting together and collaborating and trying to do the best job that they can to get individual performances out of these things. So it certainly is a worthwhile thing if you can afford it. And one thing that's great with the stable is that they make it fairly affordable for you to even just dip a toe into the waters. You don't have to fully dive in.
Yes, you can own a little and love it a lot, Ray. That sounds kind of copyrighted. Isn't that what's the ice cream place that has like all the sizes or like the whatevers?
That, you know, you mean Cold Stone?
Yeah.
Most ice cream places have sizes. there's no restaurant you go into that's called like only large, and then if you order a small, they laugh at you.
You know what? I've got two cousins. One that works at Cold Stone, and the other works at Starbucks, and they both make fun of me all the time because nobody wants to use small, medium, and large in this universe, Ray.
Well, I mean, unless you go to a place that does use small, medium, and large, that kind of puts a monkey wrench into the point you're making, because it is quite many that still use that.
Well, anyway, I've got to go put lunch in the oven. We've still got 8 minutes left. So, Ray, what I want you to do for the next 5 minutes is talk us through, and I'll jump in as I can once I get this food in the oven. But I'm very hungry, Ray. I got to get my lunch going. I hear it started to get cooking. It's salmon, by the way. Grand Circuit season. So we've seen the Borgata. We've seen the Blue Chip Matchmaker. There's our first two Grand Circuit events. What's the rest of the way look for us through November? And in particular, stuff that we're going to be doing here on The Money Media. Obviously, we've got partnerships with a lot of these big tracks, big events, the Hamiltonian, the Breeders' Crown, the International Trot. We've got all these big events, Caesars events, Wood by Mohawks events. So talk us through the preview of Grand Circuit season upcoming.
Well, I mean, the floodgates are about to open once Kentucky Derby comes. I know it's not our sport, but just traditionally, when it comes Kentucky Derby weekend, everything starts getting underway in harness racing. And once it starts rolling, it starts rolling. There are 12 divisions of standard breds that compete, from two-year-olds of each gait and sex to three-year-olds to older horses. And so pretty much every weekend, you're going to have something happening, from sire stakes on the local level. So you go to like Pocono Downs, Meadows, we're going to have loads of 2 and 3 year olds racing in sire stakes, and other jurisdictions, even older horses racing in just their own provincial programs. And then you have the main marker events. This point, the first big night is going to be June for the North America Cup. Before then, it's going to be just a bunch of, you know, sire stake races, other types of black type events that aren't like super high key, but still help build a foundation in horses. And then You know, then we go to Meadowlands Pace, and then it's Hambletonian. Pretty much every month, there's going to be some big night everything builds to, and then loads of other big nights interspersed between there. In terms of in the money stuff, we're looking forward to covering a lot of the action that comes from Caesar's Tracks, which would be, you know, Harrah's Hoosier Park, would be Scioto, would be a third one that's not coming to my mind that might or might not exist.
We're horseshoe with you on the Thoroughbred side. Caesars will have some coverage for Dan Patch Night, Caesars Trotting Classic, Scioto, their big night. Horseshoe Indy, all sorts of coverage already underway there. The Thoroughbred meet's underway. But on the harness side of things, we forgot the Meadows in there. Obviously, we have to work with Meadows again. I'm going to be talking Adios Pace. I almost feel bad listing these things because we're probably going to forget somebody. We work with so many great partners. Yeah. Yonkers, probably continue to work with, obviously. International Trot comes up. The Yonkers Trot, the Messenger Pace, the first legs of the Triple Crowns for the Pacers and the Trotters.
That's in June. That's and then the June. International Trot is September.
Yeah, we'll buy Milwaukee Park. Obviously, we do a lot of coverage with them. North America Cup comes up. The Breeders' Crown they have in years past. The Meadowlands will have the Breeders' Crown this year. We hope to continue to work with them, of course. The Hambletonian Society, the Hambletonian in early August. But back to Mohawk, North America Cup. Why am I blanking on other events? Mohawk Million in September, the Wellwood in late August. I mean, you know, they've got a great stakes schedule up there at Woodbine Mohawk, and obviously a lot of great events that we're going to look forward to covering throughout the year here on In the Money Media. But Ray, we also have coverage from overseas.
Yes.
Ska du till Sverige för loppet?
Oui, senor. lots of international action also coming in. And the thing that's been nice the last few years is that these overseas products have been opening themselves to the North American audience, so I can go on to an Express Bet or a Twin Spires, and I can watch or bet Swedish racing and bet into sizable pools at that, pools that are even better than some North American tracks. Not to throw shade at anything, but for horse players, it's certainly an avenue you could go to learn and still be betting into action that could win you some nice money over in Sweden, even in France. All the efforts done with Latrot and everything else to bring French harness racing to a North American audience and give us access to those big pools as well, even if at somewhat high takeouts and certain bets. There's a trade-off with everything. But, we'll be doing in the Money Media coverage for some of the big Swedish racing. You mentioned the Elite Lup. That's probably the one most of the Western audience is familiar with, but you know, it's a big sprawling program up there in Scandinavia. There's a lot more to it than just that one race, you know, and there's even other countries to it than Sweden. You know, Norway's got a big standard bred program.
Sweden?
Finland. There are other countries than Sweden. If you can believe it, you're in one of them somehow. Well,
we do have the first major race of the Swedish calendar year. It comes up next Saturday. It's Paralympia Travet. See, and I'm dead serious when I say this. A lot of people call next Saturday Kentucky Derby Day. That's my third saying for the day. My first saying is Dexter Cup Day at Freehold Raceway. My second saying is Paralympia Travet at Derby. And my third saying is Kentucky Derby Day at Churchill Downs. So next week on this show, on this very show, if you tune in again next week, I have two promises for you. You will hear about Paralympia Travet and all of the Swedish races and more about Swedish racing, everything coming up. And you won't hear Ray Catolo, at least on that segment. You'll get to hear the lovely stylings of Thomas Svensson and Mike Probosi. I can't guarantee we kick Ray off the entire show. I'd like to, but I can't guarantee it.
If one day this business could just finally just take me out back and blow and just do away with me. It's like, I just go, I get it. I've read Lassie too. It's heartbreaking, but I don't think I'm rabid though. So we don't actually have to do that. There was a weird point in time where everyone was trying to write books about like the child having to lose their dog. Like there was Lassie, and then when I was in school, we had to read Shiloh, which is pretty much the same thing. And it's a weird type of narrative to keep doing over and over again. Because at a certain point, you're like, how is this so common with dogs?
All right, Ray. Well, we are nearly out of time, so we have to finish with, look, I've done well. Mike Probosi's listened to this entire show. He should be very proud of me. We've stayed on track. We've talked horse racing for most of this time. All right, give us the NBA winner of the, What do they even call it? Is it the Larry Smith? What is correct? The NBA trophy?
I don't know. I don't know what they actually call it.
I think it's like the Larry O'Brien. I was on the right track. Larry O'Brien Championship Trophy. Who is going to hoist the Larry O'Brien Championship Trophy in, honestly, it's probably going to be next December because they do drag these playoffs out forever. But mid-June, who will lift it?
Oh, that's tough. I mean, most likely it's the Nuggets.
I think most likely it's the Celtics. I think most sports books would agree with that.
I would disagree with that. Like the Celtics are a textbook super team, and I think that's to their disadvantage. And on top of that, as many times as they've been through this rigmarole, they still have this strange temperament that causes them to blow big opportunities inside of the series. So that said, I think there is an advantage for the Nuggets in that. And I've liked what I've seen from the Knicks, but I also I don't think the Sixers are that, you know, super. So I don't really know how to read that, but everything momentum wise from what I'm seeing, Knicks might be fun. Knicks might be a fun pick to win it all.
Well, I'm biased. You know me. I'm a good Orlando Magic fan. I got the Magic gear and sweatshirt ready to roll tonight at work. We're down 2-0 to Cleveland. We're going to come back. We're going to win. We're going to knock out Boston. Let me have my Howard Dean moment here. We're going to go to Cleveland and win. We're going to go to Boston and win. We're going to go to New York and win. We're going to go to Denver and win. Yeah.
That was actually pretty spot on. And on top of that, yeah, I got to echo what Pete Vanaglia said on Monday night. That was an astute pop culture reference from the man I think of for pop culture references, Ed Hatter.
Well, we're going to count on Orlando going on a miracle run, but realistically, I don't know. I think Boston at their best is really tough to beat, but Miami beating them last night, you know, it's not alarm bells time or anything yet, but it means something. It has to. So I'm just saying, you know.
They did that last year too, didn't they? Didn't the Heat beat the Celtics out of the conference finals?
Not the Celtics. Oh, and yes, I believe so. But originally, the Heat, as the 8 seed, you know, through the playoff tournament, went in and beat Milwaukee, right? So, I mean, same deal, yeah. Right? They're plus 2,000 to win the series, and they go in and beat them. So, I wouldn't totally neglect the Heat. And especially if they get past this round, Jimmy Butler does return at some point or another.
Yeah, and I mean, the Bucks are in a similar boat ever since they got Damian Lillard, that they've also kind of treaded into kind of super team territory. I'll tell you this, of the teams that are in the playoffs right now, the squads that I really like, I like the Cavaliers squad. I think Donovan Mitchell being their leader is good, even though he can sometimes be hit and miss. I think he's an overall good player, and then he's supported by a good cast around him. The Pacers are with Tyrese Halliburton for one. They're in a similar boat. He's just a transcendent player, and then has a good team that knows how to play off of him and how to play together, and that really goes a long way. If the Thunder had been united for a bit longer of a time than they have, I would really like them to win it all. I loved that team last year, and like it seems like everything I liked about them has proved to be successful for them because they've made the playoffs this year versus getting beat out in the play-in tournament. So the Thunder squad, I think, also has a real bright future. The Knicks, I like Jalen Brunson, I think, has been a good addition to them. And then I don't know if they've changed their coach or anything like that since last season, because I've only been following loosely, but I'm not the biggest fan of their squad, but I know they play together well. And just with the kind of momentum they're building, that's stuff that you can carry into later playoff series. So that's why I feel like they might stand a good chance too. Celtics choke, Bucks choke.
All right, well, last 30 seconds. Here's the real question. Here's where I don't expect much word from you, but maybe you'll shock me with some deep insight. NHL, who will lift the Stanley Cup? That name I've got easier on the trophy.
A buddy of mine has a lot of money riding on the Tampa Bay Lightning, so I'm just going to root for that.
Ooh, they are down 2-0 to Florida right now. That's going to be a tricky one.
So I will not ask my friend for money anytime soon.
I as a disclaimer, I'm an Anaheim Ducks fan. We suck. We are nowhere near the playoffs, nearly dead last this year, so I have no real dog in the fight. But I would have to go New York Rangers. I'll go close here. I think they got a real chance.
The Anaheim Ducks are one of those teams where I hear their name and I don't think they're professional. I hear someone I hear someone say just the name Anaheim Ducks and I go, what is that? Is that like a U-12 hockey league?
Pretty much.
Yeah. I don't know if they need to choose like a more vicious animal, be like the Anaheim Sabretooths or like the Anaheim water snakes. I think even a water snake would be much tougher than a duck. And ducks can be territorial. They can be real buggers to deal with if you mess with them.
Well, either way, that wraps up our time here. You gave us no pick at all. Oh, I guess you gave us a pick, honey. You took Tampa Bay Lightning. That's fine. So, all right. That's our thoughts here. Hopefully, we'll give you some good insight on everything going on in the universe.
Fine. Don't let me get this one.
I guess we'll talk to you next week on Hearth Players Podcast. Ray, are we going to have you back next week, or what is the plan?
I believe that is up to the powers that be, which at the very least have said I can get another day on this planet, which if that's all I get, then that's enough.
All right. Well, there you have it. Hopefully we've given you some good insight here on a little bit of everything from the farthest reaches of Sweden to northern Canada to western Canada to everything in the world. We literally hit every place on the planet that races harness or horses. So hopefully we've given you some good insight this weekend. Hopefully all you bet you make are winning ones, be it on the sports, the horses, whatever you're betting. Hopefully you have success this weekend, and we will talk to you next week here on the Harness Players Podcast.
Bye!